through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Day. Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. The trio's reunited. Jake back from his family vacation. Jake, thanks so much for joining us, for blessing us with your presence. Did you miss us?
Yes, desperately. I missed you guys so much while I was laying by the pool in 90-degree weather down there in California.
Okay.
And
All right.
Yeah, I missed you guys tremendously. I was wondering how everything was going, and I am glad to be back with you all.
Swimmingly, Jake. Just swimmingly. Tom, I assume you had a great weekend as well. Obviously, you weren't in California with Jake's family.
No, but I had a lot of time to think about my absolutely pathetic performance in Bye 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 last week.
Well, first of all,
Come on, Tom.
Hey,
you
got
to hold it down
that.
When I'm gone.
You won it, Tom, on a technicality. You're selling yourself short.
But, I mean, Come on. Steve Largent's jersey. I got to know that.
Well, we played Bye Bye Bye, our weekly Seahawks quiz, because there was no Seahawks opponent because the Seahawks are on a bye week. But just about everything that could have gone well for Seattle did. You had the Green Bay Packers that lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That was a 38-10 score. Aaron Rodgers looked not Aaron Rodgers-like at all. You had the 49ers did you a solid and beat the Rams. We're going to talk about both of those games right now. You had a couple other good things that happened in the AFC as far as just entertainment value. We're going to get to those in NFL headlines. So let's stay in the NFC right now. Let's talk about this Buccaneers-Packers game. Bucs win 38-10. Tampa Bay's defense, Jake, looked really solid.
They really did. And you look at this group, and it's one of those groups that you wondered if they just had the preseason hype or if they were eventually going to come together. And it seems like, especially over the last few years, Tom Brady has always taken a few weeks to really get into the rhythm of the season. And boy, did it really turn out that way for the Tampa Bay offense. You even saw Rob Gronkowski get involved in the action, having a touchdown and a couple great catches in the game. And then you look at Todd Bowles and their defense. Gosh, it's a really, really talented group. And what they have in their front seven, being able to stop the run, be able to rush the passer, this was a group that you could just see their confidence growing and growing and growing throughout the game. And it was really kind of a buzzsaw that, that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers walked themselves into. And so it was a really impressive outing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it just makes you wonder if this is a group that is for real, right? That from this point on, that they've hit their stride, and now they are going to be one of the toughest teams in the NFC and in football because they certainly have the talent to be on both sides of the ball.
No, absolutely. The only thing I didn't like about this game was that I dropped Tampa Bay's defense in fantasy right before it started.
Ooh,
I hate myself for a lot of reasons.
That was a mistake. Because, Stacey, if you would have known here...
If you would have known here in cut number one
that Ndamukong Suh was going to be living in Aaron Rodgers' lap all game long, you probably would have did something different.
21 seconds left, no timeouts. And now sacked again as he's shoved down by Ndamukong Suh. And he gets up screaming at Rodgers.
Now, my favorite part is not just that he laid Aaron Rodgers out, but you could see that Ndamukong Suh had some serious words for Aaron Rodgers. And the Tampa Bay defense, they had words. They were in Aaron Rodgers' ear all game long. They wanted to frustrate, disrupt him, and it worked. Their plan worked out beautifully because they were able to dial up the pressure all game long.
Well, and that pressure was effective. One thing that stood out to me was Aaron Rodgers' pick six. Obviously, it's a rarity for him. I think it was like the third of his career, which is absolutely insane. But it's hard if you're watching the Seahawks not to notice it and feel like a little bit of joy because he's in the front runner conversation for the MVP with Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson leading that conversation and was leading it before this game. But you had plenty of people, particularly in Green Bay, saying, well, why not Aaron Rodgers? He hasn't thrown any picks. I don't care if Russell Wilson has 19 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers, no interceptions. And then he did you a solid and threw two, which, by the way, Russell Wilson hasn't done since 2018. I think one thing that stood out to me was you have Jamel Dean picking off a Rodgers pass intended for Davante Adams and returns it for six. Fantastic play by him. It wasn't necessarily even like a like a bad throw. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was a great play by Dean. I think the thing that stands out to me is that they kind of fell apart after that pick six. And you look at, you know, week two against New England, Russell Wilson basically starts that game out with a pick six, and yet they managed to get back into it, bounce back. I don't think it's necessarily something where Rodgers got in his own head and kept the game from, you know, going back to Green Bay's favor. I don't necessarily think it's that. I just think it is interesting talking about these two players in the MVP conversation to say, well, one of these guys bounced back.
Well, it's not that Rodgers is incapable of you know, bouncing back from adversity. He's done that over his career. But there's something to be said, guys, that when you look at the game and the way it went on, Aaron Rodgers' smugness comes out when everything around him's going wrong. Like, you could just see what he's thinking because he wears his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, he's shaking his head. He's looking at everybody in kind of this smug way. His body language is terrible. It manifests itself throughout the game, and I do think that that has an effect on the way your team responds, especially if it's a young team. And certainly that is different in the way that Russell Wilson handles those moments and the way that he handles his teammates as well.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Tom Wassel, Jake Heap, Stacey Rost here talking about this weekend's games, how it benefited Seattle. Tom, I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't want to make it personal. But your boy Jared Goff did not look great.
Well, I mean, he looked great.
Did he?
In his glorious Rams uniform.
Looked so handsome. Don't get me wrong.
Aesthetically speaking, I mean, all the Rams look great all the time.
Okay. Those uniforms are trash, Tom, but continue with your take.
Okay. They're not, is the thing. look, Jared Goff makes some of the worst throws I have ever seen. Now, Cooper Kupp in particular didn't make it any easier on him. Dropping that touchdown pass in the end zone in the corner there, that probably would have changed the game. They could have made it 21-16 there. I think it was either early in the fourth quarter or at the end of the third. That would have changed everything, but he drops it, and instead, Goff ends up throwing a pick on the next play to Verrett there. So you want to talk about, like, in the Packer game where that interception changed everything. I think that interception in the Ram game changed everything right there. Here's the thing, though. Russell doesn't miss throws to open receivers generally. Goff, Garoppolo, at least in that game last night, they missed them repeatedly. Like, Russell doesn't have games like that ever. He's had some bad games where, you know, passes get tipped for picks. That's a little bit different. At least he made the right throw there most of the time. If that Ram team shows up against the Seahawks, I think the Seahawks can crush them like bugs, provided that they get some pressure on Goff. Okay, I said last week that San Francisco was done. Now I'm not so sure just because of the way that game changed the standings. They played with a purpose last night, at least defensively.
Yeah, they sure did.
They did. Again, get the pressure. Everything else can fall into place. Garoppolo, again, doesn't scare me really at all. He never has. Last night confirmed that. The difference between Goff and Garoppolo, I think, is the ceiling. Goff's is always much higher, but against a better defense, he has major issues. I think Russell and Mahomes are the only two quarterbacks in the league that are capable of beating the pressure on their own. If their offensive line is getting overwhelmed throughout a game, Mahomes and Russell are still capable of making that situation work somehow. It may get ugly, but they can still come through for you. Most other quarterbacks in the league are not. Rodgers used to be in that category. I'm not so sure he is right now.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that statement, Tom, because you look at Russell Wilson last year. Just look at him last year, the difference between him and Aaron Rodgers and the way that he was able to handle the 49ers, right? The pressure that Aaron Rodgers felt and the way that he performed versus Russell Wilson. Still a great defensive line. Actually, Aaron Rodgers had a better offensive line than Russell last year, and yet Russell was still able to, A, beat the 49ers once, and then B, be an inch away from beating them twice, right? So they have the unique ability, him and Mahomes, Tom, to your point, to be able to have the unique way of feeling pressure, being able to make the subtle moves and changes and keep their eyes downfield. And then also, I think it's a mentality that they believe that the best thing is coming next. That, hey, it's not going to be a repeated thing. That, look, adversity may have struck early, but it's not going to continue to keep going on. They're going to continue to keep believing that the best is yet to come. And I think that's the difference between a guy like Mahomes, a guy like Russell Wilson. And he's got the those two guys have the rest of the team buying into that. They're going to find something magical to be able to, you know, help them overcome a lot of the adversity that they see, is particularly with even a tremendous pass rush.
You guys know how your girl loves a bad joke.
Of course.
From the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, Goff was ... Goffle.
Yeah. Okay, I like it. I like it.
Hear me out,
Tom. Appreciate it from the texter.
Tom, tell me what you think about this one. Goff had a couple gaffes. No? Nope.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Always send in your bad jokes to me, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we gotta protect the kids" nonsense.
What percentage of players do you think sit on the couch and watch NFL football on the Sundays that they don't play? Like, is Russell sitting there glued to it with Sierra? I mean, like, how much of the team watches and enjoys football just recreationally, Jake?
I would probably say about 80%. 80% are huge fans. Yeah, I mean, they love the game. They love the game. They're interested in what's going on. And also, they have a lot of friends. They have a lot of friends, you know, playing on teams throughout the week. I mean, you look at DK Metcalf, you know, cheering on the Tennessee Titans because his best friend in the world is a receiver for them. And I think that you have those different relationships that makes guys interested in rooting for friends, but also that they're genuinely curious as to what's going on, and they're just as involved in the game. You know, some of them, whether they're going through injuries or other things, sometimes you need that mental reprieve to give yourself that opportunity to, you know, truly get your mind and your body ready to go to gear back up for the rest of the season. So everybody has a different approach, but I would say probably about 80% of the guys watch on Sundays.
Yeah, Jake took the words out of my mouth as far as those relationships go. I think one thing we forget as fans, as people covering the sport, is how many close relationships there are between players in the league. These guys are your college teammates, you know, your best friends, guys you maybe grew up with, guys you became friends with in college, and so you watch them and you care about their success with other teams. And when you see those jersey exchanges, that's part of the reason people get upset about that too, is this opportunity to enjoy that with someone that you're really close with. And so I think the relationships keep that going. Based only on Twitter, I would say like a healthy majority of athletes watch these games.
Yeah, I would have said probably like 60. I mean, I don't know, 60 or 80 or whatever it is, but if you commit your life to something, I would think you would have a general interest in it. Like, I'm not really a consumer of sports talk radio as much as I once was when I wasn't in this business, but I'm still interested in, like, what's going on in general. Now speaking of that, honest question, because Jake was out part of last week. Do you guys listen to this show on days that you're off, Stacey?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, Jake?
That is not true. That is not true, because we have caught you texting in before, okay? So that is definitely not true. We know you're lying.
I usually text in like, why isn't Stacey here? She's so great. Signed, definitely not Stacey. Also,
That's speaking of
texting in, someone else says, Jared was a little goth yesterday. Huh? That one's good.
Tom is not going to respect any of these jokes that are at Jared Goff. You just got
to
know that.
He's not going to
want to hear any of it. But for me, when I'm off, yeah, from time to time, I will check in. But I didn't over the course of this vacation. If I'm around, if I'm home and I'm taking time off, then yeah. I mean, when I'm in the car, I'll drive.
Yeah.
But,
right.
You know, I was definitely enjoying the time off.
I don't, because we do this 5 days a week. If we did it once a week, like NFL players play once a week, I probably would, because there's just less available content. But 5 days a week, I don't really think there's much point. Next.
Number two.
Noted.
All right, guys.
Tom.
What's that?
I said noted.
Yeah. What's harder? Because I want to. There's going to be some people, I don't know if it's going to be minority, majority, but who say that whoever wins this World Series didn't really earn it because they didn't have to get through the whole season. But what's harder, getting through a 162-game season in the normal playoff format, three rounds, or a 60-game season in the expanded format and having to, you know, not being able to play at home, et cetera, and getting through four rounds? Well, what's harder, Jake?
I think what's harder is the 160 games. That is such a grind. That is such a grind. And truly, it is really trying to be the last, you know, couple teams standing. And to have any time that you make not getting into the playoffs more and more limited, I'm always going to choose that. If you have more teams that are getting into the playoffs, it's easier because even in a 60-game run and stretch there's more room for error. Whereas in 160 games, there is less room for error, and you truly find out who's the best of the best.
Yeah, to me, this isn't necessarily close. I mean, the 162-game season, one of the toughest just like grinds in football as far as getting to the – or baseball as far as getting to the postseason. I mean – there's a reason it's so hard, and I think it's got to be – it's not a competition to me. Like, the 60-game season in expanded format made it that much easier. Would I still have celebrated had Seattle made it and had they won a World – 1,000%. I would have been like, oh, my gosh, like, this is amazing. This counts just like any other year. Now that Seattle's not in it, I can say that it doesn't.
I think that – I agree with both of you, but I think that whoever wins this World Series – really will have earned it having to get through four rounds of playoffs. I do think it's interesting, though, that despite the fact that they let so many teams in, both of the number one seeds ended up getting there. That's encouraging. Now, both of them came very close to not getting there because they had to go seven games in the previous round. So that really could have gone either way. I don't think that this both number one seeds getting there proves anything. But again, they will have earned it. Next.
Number three.
Watching that Ram 49er game last night, looking at McVay and Kyle Shanahan, it occurred to me that this division, I think, is full of very good coaches. Very good coaches. So I'll ask, besides Pete Carroll, who's the best coach in the NFC West? And if you think somebody's better than him, you can say it, Jake.
No, I don't think either one of those guys is better than Pete Carroll. But, man, that's a real toss-up. To me, it's more of a personality decision than anything else. I think I lean more towards Sean McVay. I really enjoy his personality type. I think that he's fun. He's intense. Just you can feel his passion for the game at all times. So I really think that if I had a choice between which coach I would like to play for, it would be Sean McVay.
I go Carroll one. McVay and Shanahan are a little more interchangeable for me. The Rams' ability to bounce back this year after a tough 2019 and the start to their season in general, when I had them kind of being in fourth place in the NFC West before the season started, so I put him at number two for me. Then I have Shanahan. Fourth, I have Kingsbury just because of that picture of him in his loafers in front of his fireplace. No other reason. That's why I have him fourth.
It's not because he's the last choice.
No.
It's because of the loafers.
You posted that picture and you made that choice, and that's the consequence.
I'm confirming. He was the one that posted that picture, or was it the Cardinals?
Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury.
I guess it must have been because he was alone. yeah, I agree. That picture has really come to define him, and he's more or less unproven in the NFL because of what he inherited last year. He has a quarterback that completely matches up with his system. I think sometimes the true test of a head coach is what he does with a situation that's imperfect and that doesn't necessarily suit him. You know, I mean, that's what earns you things like Coach of the Year. Like, what will Pete Carroll do with a defense or a team that doesn't really fit what he has done in the past. I mean, it's always defense and a running game. That's what they have right now, is the complete opposite of that. And he seems to be doing well with it so far, which makes me think he is a good candidate for coach of the year. One more quick point on this. They kept talking last night about McVay and Shanahan and how close they are. Like, they're great friends, and they were both together in Washington and the whole thing. Would you rather, if you were a coach or if you were in competition with anybody for anything, would you rather lose to a friend or someone you don't know? I feel like when you're doing it against a friend, that kind of elevates the stakes a little. What do you think, Stacey?
Sorry, my mic cut out for a minute there. What were you saying, Tom?
Jake, what are you saying?
Well, when it comes to Jared Goff and it comes to Sean McVay, these guys being friends, I think that when you look at that, I would rather lose to a friend. I would rather lose to somebody that I genuinely root for, because it would you look at Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh. You look at Pete Carroll and Bruce Arians. They were not friends, and they hated losing to each other. So is it more fun in terms of a rivalry and a production standpoint and for talk radio that they absolutely hate each other? Yes. But if I'm Sean McVay or am I Kyle Shanahan, I would rather lose to a friend.
Huh.
Would you not?
I could see it either way. I mean, I'd rather not lose to somebody that I hate if it's a true rivalry. But I don't know. I want to be the cool guy in my group of friends. I don't want to be the loser.
Tom, I have awful news. Just kidding.
What's that? Yeah.
Oh, that's a hard dig right
Bam!
There.
Bam!
Coming in strong.
Do you guys think that the NFC West has just, like, 10 seconds. Do you think the NFC West has the best collection of coaches right now? I know that we're right up close and personal, so it's easy for us to say yes. If you're outside of it, you're like, well, the Cardinals haven't, you know, been close to the playoffs, and the 49ers are having a bad year, so I get why you might think not, but I think that they do.
From
I'm
top
just glancing over the divisions top to bottom. I mean,
yeah,
the
from
moment,
top
I, you know what? The AFC North I think has some good coaches too, but top to bottom, yes, absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah, I would agree with that. AFC North is I think a competitive group. You look at, you know, the NFC North as well. You talk about, you know, Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota Vikings. I know the Vikings aren't doing well, but I think Mike Zimmer's a good coach. But yeah, I think the NFC West is top to bottom the best one.
All right, I'm going to ask Mike Salk this same question. We'll also ask him about that gaffe by Aaron Rodgers. I'll stop with the Jared Goff jokes, Tom, but I'm warning you, they might come back in the show. They might come back later
fine.
In the show.
I'm an adult. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
Okay, great. Okay. Mike Salk joins us next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Don't forget, if you missed the show, you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Well, Seattle didn't play this week, but just about everything that could have worked out for them did. The Green Bay Packers lost, a game that didn't look so great for Aaron Rodgers. You had, of course, the San Francisco 49ers upsetting the L.A. Rams. And I got to just get back on this game really quick, you guys, because I said before this game that the L.A. Rams were looking like the team to beat in the NFC West. They were like a bad play, a bad call away from also being undefeated. And I think the big takeaway was like, well, a lot of those wins were against the NFC East. Mike Salk joining us right now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I know you felt the same way about the Rams, that they were the team to beat. Did watching that loss change your mind at all about, you know, kind of the competition they posed to Seattle this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to over react to 1 week. But, I mean, watching the Rams not look good, watching Green Bay look really terrible overall against Tampa Bay, it sure was a heck of a good weekend for Seattle, and great to watch them look better without even needing to move a muscle. So I'll try to look at the season as a whole and not just be swayed by what I saw yesterday. I still think the Rams and Packers are going to be the two biggest competitive teams that the Seahawks will have to get past this year, but it shows you that we're not quite ready to write off San Francisco. we're not quite ready to write off Tampa Bay, and that there may actually be some competition in the NFC after all.
Well, you talk about that competition, Mike, and these next 5 weeks certainly are going to put the Seahawks to the test. And this will be a great litmus test for this group, and they have an amazing opportunity to truly separate themselves from the rest of the pack. How do you think they get that done?
Well, you got to beat Arizona. I mean, look, Buffalo obviously is a good test for them, and in order to do it, you've got to force Josh Allen to be accurate. Right? Make him stay in the pocket. Don't let him run around and make him be accurate. That's not been his strength, of course, across his NFL career. It's been better this year, but I don't trust him over the course of 60 minutes to make accurate throws. And when he misses them, you've got to take advantage. You've got to find ways to pick him off when balls are thrown errantly. But you can afford to lose to Buffalo, right? It's an AFC East team. It's a good one. They've already beaten your chief rival in the NFC West in the Rams. What you got to do is take care of business in your division, and that means making sure that you beat those three teams in a row as you face them here over the next few weeks.
Do you think there's anything other than pass rush that can consistently mitigate the fact that the NFL is currently rigged in favor of passing offenses?
I wish there was something they could do about it, Tom. I mean, in the past, we've seen these points of emphasis, right, that just continue to make it easier and easier for passing offenses to be effective. It started with the Colts around, 2003, 2004, somewhere in that range where, they complained so bitterly about being held, and the league said, no, we want these big offenses and these quarterbacks to succeed. And so they just went all out from then on out, making all of the rule changes easier and easier for offense. And a couple of years later, you end up getting the defenseless receiver rule. And I understand why these are all made, and I understand that there seems to be this passion for basketball on grass. And I'm not in that camp, and maybe that makes me an old man. I do like to see a passing offense. I just don't like to see 32 of them. I want to see a variety of teams competing in a variety of ways. I think we've already made some of these mistakes in baseball where finding the best way to win is not necessarily the same as finding the best thing to watch. And the teams that are now dominating baseball are the ones that have mastered the sabermetric ideas, and they win, and they work, and nobody's doubting that. But they also can be really brutal to watch. It used to be fun to watch teams bunt. It used to be fun to watch teams steal, and not necessarily, a ball up the middle would be a base hit. Now all of those things are just gone by the wayside because they don't make perfect sense from a sabermetric point of view. And I think that stinks. It really hurts the viewership of the game. And I'm worried that we're going to end up doing the same thing in football, where we're so reliant on a good thing in these passing offenses that we don't allow anybody else to succeed. And I really hope that's not the case.
I love all those points. Amen.
Well, I hope that that's not the case, Salk, as well. But I also think that maybe this year it might be flipped. It might be flipped this year in the sense that it truly is a year where you have offenses who are ahead of defenses, and that's normally not the case. Usually we're making the other argument here. But you look at the way Tampa Bay's defense played against the Green Bay Packers. They certainly look like they had, figured some things out as a group. You see the San Francisco 49ers play better defense than they had, for the most part this year. What was the other game that I watched that stood out? The Pittsburgh Steelers are playing really good defense.
Like I understand what you're saying, but it's not just offense over defense. It's specifically the edge that goes to passing the ball. And when all of your rule changes have been made to help the pass more than anything else, and the sabermetrics folks out there ridicule running and ridicule running backs and ridicule anything other than making sure your quarterback throws the ball down the field 50 times a game, whether they're right or not is immaterial. We are sports fans, and I want to be able to enjoy watching the sport in addition to my team giving itself the best chance to win.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just saying that I don't think necessarily that's all the way the case here. I don't think that we're going to see this the NFL go full-blown into Major League Baseball. I don't think we'll ever get into that realm. You still see the Baltimore Ravens, who are getting it done running the ball. You see the 49ers, who are doing their darndest to protect Jimmy Garoppolo at all costs by running the football. I still think that there's a variety of different teams who are running the ball successfully, but I get your point, and I think this year has highlighted that particular issue more than any other year.
Yeah, and maybe we're not going to get all the way there. Maybe it won't be as drastic as baseball, but history tells me that these things evolve over time, and that in copycat leagues where things tend to work and there's so much money on the line, eventually that scientific method will lead us towards a couple of teams or almost all the teams doing the same thing. And I just, you know, that's tough, right? I mean, you look at these two teams that just made it to the World Series. They do things very similarly. It's interesting considering the fact that they have such completely different payrolls, right? One of the tops and one of the lowest in all of baseball. But this is mm-hmm. the Andrew Friedman Cup now, right? A guy who goes from Tampa to L.A. to be the GM in both places. And both of them do things very similarly. So, I don't know. I know what you're saying, Jake, and I appreciate that the passing part of the game is not everything just yet, but I worry we're on a trajectory to get there.
Is there any way in which getting through four rounds of playoffs in baseball is as or maybe more impressive than the 162 games with the regular playoff format? In other words, whoever wins this, are people going to try to detract from that, do you think, because it wasn't the full thing, or should we acknowledge that they had to get through an extra round of playoffs, which is difficult?
Yeah, I don't think that I would detract from it at all. I mean, having watched this now and seeing these teams get to where they are, I think it's certainly as, I don't know about more, but I would say it's been as difficult. It's a slightly different challenge, right, because you're just missing those extra 100 games. But I think that it sure appears as if this playoff format has whittled it down to what have appeared to be two of the best teams this year. Were they definitely 1 and 2? I don't know, maybe not. But they were certainly among the top five best teams this year, and that's all you can ask for out of a playoff format. We've gotten two of the best. And it's been really compelling. I mean, watching the Astros almost crawl all the way back from 3-0 and then watching the Dodgers find a way from 3-1 to get it done against the Braves, those are really compelling stories. I got to admit, I was nauseated watching the reaction to Mike Zunino doing the walk-off interview after game 7.
Oh, come on, Mike.
There's just nothing like Mariner, just not even Mariner, just Seattle fans' desire to love people who have left because they're so nice. You know what I do? I root against Mike Zunino.
That's not just Seattle.
I root for the guys they got back for him, and I hope he fails wherever he goes. I'm not interested in being a Mike Zunino fan. I'm interested in being a Mariners fan.
Oh, Mike, I got to disagree with you on that one. I think it's very normal for people to continue to root for fan favorites.
Yeah, well, he's so nice. Thank God he's so nice.
Oh, gosh. Oh, you're killing
whatever.
Me.
Hey, Mike Zunino, hit more than 200 maybe, and we can talk about how nice you are.
You can hear Mike and his potential rant about Mike Zunino on the weekly Brock and Salk podcast. New episodes drop Tuesday nights. We'll see if this is included. You can always hear him every day at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Mike, always a good time.
See you guys.
The Seahawks control their own destiny at 5-0, but that doesn't mean they won't need improvements, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. There are three defensive players we want to see, need to see, take a step forward after the bye week. We'll tell you who they are next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
The road to the Super Bowl goes through Seattle. Yes, it's very early to be saying that. But you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. So deal. Deal with it. That doesn't mean that it's going to be an easy road, though. They've got a couple tough games coming up here right in the middle of the season. You're going to need some guys to step up at the end of the day. I mean, you're 5-0. That's a great record, but you haven't been perfect. This team knows it, and I think that where they've been struggling, no surprise, is on defense. So we all thought of a Seahawk that we want to see step up. We need to see step up after the bye week. Unsurprisingly, all these players are on defense, but they're three different guys for three different reasons. Tom, I'm going to let you go first.
You'd think that we'd all pick somebody who hasn't played well yet, who needs to, like, raise their game. That's maybe the traditional kind of thinking for a question like this. But I actually chose Jamal Adams. He's already played well, clearly. But when he returns, he needs to at least play at the same level, if not better. He's a better player than everybody else, so I hold him to a higher standard. He has to have an impact in a big way in order to make the defense better. When we ask, is this defense sustainable? The answer is probably no, and Adams is the difference between them being in a rut and actually posing a consistent threat to offenses. I mean, he's just capable of doing so many different things in coverage, blitzing, tackling, etc., that he always has to be accounted for. So without him, it frees up offenses to be more creative. With him, it not only limits offenses, but it also makes other players around him better by allowing them to focus solely on their responsibilities and not the things that Adams would normally be affecting. And let me just add that when Adams is present, both on the field and on the sidelines, I think that there's something to that intangibility there that just makes everybody more confident, right? Like, when you're around better people, you're better. You're around good people, you're more good, which is, you know, however you want to define that word.
I like I think to say gooder.
There's some level of importance to that. Gooder, yeah.
Yeah, you're even gooder.
You're gooder than that.
Well, and when he's at his best, it sounds a little bit like this in cut three.
Burkhead stays in the backfield with a tight trips on the right side. Newton has time. Blitz is coming. He scrambles. He gets tripped. He goes down. It's Jamal Adams.
Now, with Jamal Adams, he certainly is a weapon, as you described, Tom. And the thing that he has to do when he comes back and what Pete Carroll and Ken Norton need to do, they need to figure out how they're going to use him and how they're going to implement him in some of the strategy of which they incorporated the last 2 weeks. And you got to find that perfect mix and match there. I think that's key. For me, the guy that I am relying on to step up and a player who I think has done really well so far this season is Benson Mayowa. Now, Benson Mayowa, I believe, has been worth the investment in which they've given him, that $3 million contract that they've given him, because he has taken on a new role. For the first time in his career, he has actually been the number one defensive end. And in his career, he has been a traditional rotational pass rusher, your second or third best rotational pass rusher, and I think he's done a nice job. But if anyone was thinking that Benson Mayowa was going to come in and get 10 sacks this season, I think that was a little bit more optimistic than what history tells you. History has shown you that Benson Mayowa is a very much an up-and-down player in the league. Doesn't mean he's not a good player, but he's up and down. And what Benson Mayowa, I think, has done so far has been good, and he certainly had key plays, you know, maybe none bigger than here in cut number two, Benson Mayowa forcing a fumble by Kirk Cousins to end the game.
Tight trip set near side. Cousins going to look down the middle. His arm is going to be hit. Falls incomplete as the Seahawks go scrambling for the ball just in case it was a fumble. Clock is still running. I think it was going to be a fumble as the clock runs out.
Here's rolling on the field fumble forward out of court. Ball will be played back to the original spot where it was fumbled, and that is the end of the game.
Now, with those types of plays, he's doing that with little to no help in terms of pass rush, right? He doesn't have an ace on the other side. Bruce Irvin was the other player that they had spent money for to get that pass rush. Benson Mayowa is kind of doing this alone from an edge rushing standpoint. He's done a great job, but in order for this group to take off the way that they need to defensively, especially over the next 5 weeks, you need to see Benson Mayowa not only continue the play that he's had over the first 5 weeks, but it needs to be even better.
Yeah, I like this pick. I was considering Alton Robinson as mine, just looking specifically, maybe not at that Leo spot where Robinson isn't going to be as much, but obviously at both defensive end spots. I like the pick of Benson Mayowa, though, because what he's shown so far has been promising. He's been a part of a lot of really big plays for Seattle. I think, too, you can't overlook the fact that he is a veteran in this league, Jake. And I think that's why I really like this pick and why I second-guessed that choice of Alton Robinson. And instead, you know, I think that...
Well, they're going to need Alton Robinson,
they're
gonna
need
too.
Him.
I mean, they absolutely are going to need him, Stacey. So yeah. I don't blame you for that at all because, like I said, Benson Mayowa, from a defensive line standpoint, edge rushing standpoint, he's been doing it by himself in terms of consistently getting pressure on the quarterback. He hasn't always gotten home, but I think he's done a good job getting that pressure. So to your point, Alton Robinson and Rasheem Green coming back and OJ, like, they need to be more consistent.
Okay, I also stuck on the defensive line for mine. I went on the interior, though, with Jaron Reed. So there's a couple reasons I chose Jaron Reed. One, this is a guy that had 10-plus sacks for you 2 years ago. You're paying him $11 million. He's supposed to be a playmaker for you. Two, he had a really great game last time this team was out against the Minnesota Vikings. You've seen him improve over the course of the season. I think it's encouraging because last year when he came back in, he had that six-game suspension, and it took him a while to get going. And I think this year you've seen him get a chance to have a full season. Granted, he didn't have much of an offseason, but it's still promising. Outside of just play on the field, though, what I really like is what Pete Carroll had to say about him in Cut 4 here.
He spoke to the defense the other night, Saturday night, and Kenny had called him up to talk to him, and he had a little video that he wanted to show, and he had a lot to challenge the guys with. And so when you do that, you know, really good guys know that they're always challenging themselves. You know, I got to live up to it. There was a unique part of this weekend that Jaron did some talking and said some stuff that, you know, he wanted our guys to be, and why not us kind of thing. And that's really when you set the stage for yourself. You know, he had to live up to it, and he did.
This defense has two All-Pros, a bunch of Pro Bowlers. You have a first-round pick on your defensive line, a second-round pick, Jaron Reed, that you're paying a ton of money to. You have almost no excuse not to improve this year. You have too much talent to be as bad as you have been through several weeks. And I don't want to take away from the individual performances you've seen from players. There have been really good ones. Ugo Amadi, who we didn't include here, has been really promising, filling in at nickel corner. There have been, you know, KJ Wright, there have been good moments for this defense. I don't want to take away from it, but you are underplaying when it comes to your expectations and your talent level. That's why I like this quote about Jaron Reed. The idea that, like, you know what? Part of what you might have been missing is just a moment to have guys like Bobby Wagner, guys like Jaron Reed say, what are we doing here? Let's get this together. I liked that moment from him. I think you needed to see it.
I know we got to run here, but we'll be back in a second. But maybe just a question to think about. If you could pick, would you rather your weaker players make a minimal improvement, or would you rather that your lesser number of better players make a minimal improvement? Because I think it's unlikely that anybody's going to, like, go from a D player to an A player, or that anybody's suddenly going to make a jump and become just a different guy. So would you rather a greater number of weaker players make an improvement, or a lesser number of better players make an improvement?
I think I'll answer that real quick. Is the lesser of your better players. If the lesser of your better players can make improvements and they can make an impact, because that's the difference. The reason why they're your best players is because they can make a greater impact on the game. Now, I understand the question, because from a depth perspective, you want more contribution from everybody. But what this defense has been, just taking the context of this year, it has been feast or famine in terms of turnovers. It's been feast or famine of big plays. And if that's the way that this group is going to get things done, then let's have – I would pick having your better players having that continual improvement, because they have the greatest chance of making those big plays.
All right, we'll take it back. We'll take a look back at week 6 in the NFL and a look ahead for Seattle when John Clayton joins us next.